As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's been worked on here and in Russia on and off for over 8 years. I shall force someone to take the body away from him. And Johnny will really hit those microphones and those cameras with blood all over him, fighting off anyone who tries to help him, defending America even if it means his own death, rallying a nation of television viewers into hysteria to sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy. Now, this is very important. I want the nominee to be dead about 2 minutes after he begins his acceptance speech, depending on his reading time under pressure. You are to hit him right at the point that he finishes the phrase, "Nor would I ask of any fellow American, in defense of his freedom, that which I would not gladly give myself, my life before my liberty."
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. I'm Dave Dufour. That means this is Nerder, She Wrote. Joining me, as always, to kick off the season, my main man, Mo DeKeel. Seth Partnow, also in the house. Don't forget, The Mid-Range Theory, out on paperback. Go and get it. What's up, guys? Opening nights. They had two opening nights, which is awesome. The NBA, so epic. Two opening nights. Are you guys excited for the start of the season?
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. But, Dave, I apologize. I'm going to hijack the show. I should have said this pregame. We got to give a shout-out. R.I.P. Angela Lansbury.
That's right. That's right.
We can't talk about Nerder, She Wrote without talking about Murder, She Wrote.
The show's name would not exist.
The queen has passed, so we have to at least just acknowledge that. Rest in peace.
I seem to recall that this house has some connection with the Revolutionary War. I mean, didn't George Washington sleep here once?
That's right. Well, coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about opening night a little bit. We're going to talk about our favorite things because that's how we start every show. And we are going to enjoy a bit of small sample size theater. But first, guys, I want to talk about my favorite thing, and it is parody. Yes, parody. This is the second season in a row where I don't know who the champ's going to be. And I love it. Last year's playoffs were epic because we didn't know who was going to come out of either conference. It was amazing. And we actually watched teams improve over the course of the playoffs, which I don't know that we often get a chance to do. So, guys, is this the most parody that we've ever seen in the league?
I think so. I think you look at it, and this is the most, at the start of the season, the most number of contenders I've looked at. And I go, like, there are six in my mind, three in each conference that I look at, and I go, like, yeah, they win a championship. I could see all of that. Then there's like two or three on each side again that where I'm like, all right, if they win a championship, like, okay, something's got to go right. But like, yeah, it's certainly in the realm of possibility. This is the most just contenders that we've had in the NBA for a long time. Now it will whittle down as the season goes because that's the season. But we've never started the season, I think, with this many just teams where we're like, yeah, legitimate chance to win a championship.
We're in one of those kind of rare periods, sort of. The NBA has typically been fairly dynastic. And, you know, no disrespect intended to the Warriors who just won the title, but I think we all know the clock is ticking on if it's this year, if it's not, like that, they don't have that much longer on center stage. And so before the next kind of team arises, there is that sort of feeling of who's next. We kind of got that, you know, when Jordan retired the second time. And I think we're kind of there again with the benefit that the play on the floor is in so much better place than it was in 1999.
So many old heads right now, Seth, are ready to come after you. Everybody's coming after
NBA
you.
NBA was awful. The NBA was awful in the early 2000s.
Remember when the Jazz scored like 54 in a finals game?
I totally remember this stuff.
I will say there are more guys pushing to be in the top 10 than I can remember. I mean, it just feels like the level of play, and obviously as time goes on, every player in the league is just better, right? Like there are no bums anymore. They can expand. They could add two more teams. No, man, the bums that you have now are not bums, dude. These guys are the bums in the NBA right now would be pretty good players 20 years ago. And so like we call them bums because you're a bum compared to Luka Doncic. But if you take this guy and put him in a time machine, you drop off Shaq Harrison in 2001, Shaq Harrison is probably a starter for some of these teams. So it's just, I got to find a new guy. My apologies to Shaq Harrison. He's a good player.
Damn,
and
he's just giving strays out. He's just taking, he's probably just trying to have his breakfast right now. And all of a sudden he's getting hit with these.
But I think this is why there's so much parity because, you know, we know that having a star player, right? That's part one to being a successful franchise, right? Having a star player. There are more stars to go around. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander plays for Oklahoma City. Now, I don't know, maybe he's not a star, but he's a really, really good player, and he's on one of the worst teams in the league. And that just didn't used to happen. You know, the Charlotte Bobcats didn't have a good player on their team. And so I think that helps with the parity. It really isn't any given night league at this point.
Why are you going to do Walter Herman that way?
Herman. Who? Herman.
Walter Hermann.
Yeah, Morrison aside, you know.
Guys, the two of you just handing out strays left and right. Get the names right, of all people, me saying that. And Dave just kneecapping dudes that are just minding their own business. But I think, Dave, it goes to actually my favorite thing, which is we're in the golden age of the NBA. It is unbelievable. Like, we have so many damn good teams. On Wednesday night, you're looking at the lineup, and it's, you know, yeah, there are some bad games. No question. Spurs played. Definitely going to be a bad game whenever they play. But Orlando-Detroit was fun to watch and an exciting game. You know, you have a lot of talent across the board to go with what you're saying. And it's every team you have a reason to watch for the most part. And I think this is the league we're at now. It's the talent level is so good and so spread out on every team. There's a reason to watch and catch a game, whereas on a night where there was 14 games, I would probably say, like, yeah, I could probably skip more than half of these. Now I'm like, dude, I don't have enough screens.
The Orlando-Detroit, like, you know, the real opening night kickoff, that being the game, people were kind of making fun of it, right? Like, oh, Orlando. Dude, that game was so much fun. Bojan Bogdanović is insane. He's just going to be
player
gunning.
Those teams.
Cade Cunningham, continuing what we saw from him in the second half of last year, Jalen Durant. I mean,
Jaden Ivey.
Team has guys now.
I mean, Paolo Banchero for Orlando.
Ben Carroll looked great.
So good.
Franz Wagner, one of my all time draft L's is there's so many good Jaden Ivey. So many good players on the floor.
This is why I hope they do find a way to get some sort of a. And I know it doesn't matter, but a single elimination tournament for the NBA, because it is any given night, one of these teams can beat you. I mean, again, Paolo Banchero, first game as a professional, he looked like, I don't know, he looked like he'd been playing for a few years, man. Like, this guy was solid, just making plays all over the place. The rookies are coming in at a higher level. I want to make fun of the tanking teams for playing bad players, but truth is, you might hit on some of these guys. I mean, Jordan Poole would have been a perfect tank player, you know, 2.5 seasons ago, and that guy just signed a huge contract because he's too good. So, yeah, man, the league is the golden age of the NBA. Is a good way to put it, Mo.
I mean, the just look at it this way to talk about Paolo Banchero's night 25-5-5. Do you guys know the last rookie to have done that?
I believe that was LeBron James.
Yes, and the rookie before that?
Kareem.
No, Grant Hill.
Oh.
But that's how far back.
Sorry.
That's how far back we're going with 25-5-5 on a rookie debut. It's so few and far between. Think about the space of time between Banchero to LeBron, the space of time between LeBron and Grant Hill rookie year. And if and Kareem, I don't know if that's the stat, Seth, but maybe other guys have done it in between.
I thought I saw Kareem, you know, figure any crazy
but
stat.
Kareem is a good chance, right? Yeah. Just throw it out there. But like, that's just. That's him coming in his first game as a rookie. And I just think across the board, like, we just have so much talent and more coming in. Like, shout out to the last few draft classes. You've all done a great job. It's been unbelievable. And the next one coming in is going to be fun.
So my favorite thing, sorry, I had something and then I just completely
okay.
give me a.
I can't wait till we
make a note of this. I
can't wait till this one's live.
Yeah, no, sorry. I don't know. I've been fiddling with my light over here and everything. I mean, he cut it.
Small sample size theater to set us up for. It's only one game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So my favorite thing is, of course, the massive importance of that first game, of how we know everything we're going to know about all these teams after one game this year. Sixers are done. Nuggets are done. Dallas is hopeless. Can't finish games. I'm very excited to have the full season determined for us.
Well, that sets us up perfectly for a little game I like to call. It's only one game, but... And we'll do that after the break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
And lastly, the most important guys are the players. And instead of me talking about them, I'm going to have Klay Thompson come out and talk about them.
Wow. Dub Nation, I'm going to keep it short and sweet, but we love you with all of our hearts. I mean, me and Wiseman were in here a summer ago just looking at this empty arena like, man, it could use a banner. And the vision came to fruition, and now we're here. And I just want to send a special shout out to my mother. I know she's watching. She couldn't be here tonight, but I love you so much, Mom. Thanks for everything. Love you. And I'm going to hand it over to our MVP, number 30, the greatest to ever shoot it, Mr. Stephen Curry.
Okay, guys, time to play America's favorite game. Seth, it's only one game, but...
So the fun thing about small sample size theater is you can tell a lot more about how a team is going to play, how a player is going to play, than how well they're going to do it a lot sooner. So there are some things that I did take from, you know, tongue in cheek saying I love the sample size theater. But there are some things you can take away, one of which was, there's been some players that we've been concerned that their offenses are leaning almost too much into the one player has the ball all the time. Usually the poster children for that have been Harden, Luka, and Trae Young. Two of those players, I think we kind of saw that continue. But Trae Young played off the ball more than he basically ever has. I mean, he still has the ball a lot, but he was down about 5 points of possession time playing alongside DeJounte Murray. He took 4 catch and shoot threes. He took 77 all last season. Now, that doesn't mean the problem is solved or that he's going to be an off-ball threat all season, but that's a positive development. And contrasting that with sort of James Harden not playing off of Tyrese Maxey and kind of catching and holding and allowing Boston's defense to recover to him completely, I think that's a positive sign for the Hawks.
Another positive is that he and DeJounte combined for 24 assists. That's crazy. They have two legitimate point guards that can make plays for other people, and not a lot of teams have that, Mo.
No, I think they have a great chance to do some stuff on offense. But I think my pushback on it, Seth, is like, that's great. The catch and shoot shots, like the fact that Trae Young's in a position to be a threat when he doesn't have the ball is important. But they got to play off each other. And there were instances I saw in preseason where it was really your turn, my turn with the ball, and I'll just go stand in the corner, which is fine for Trae to stand in the corner. But it's not fine for DeJounte Murray to stand in the corner, because nobody's going to – you're going to crowd the paint. You're going to let him shoot and deal with that from there. The what I want to see more from them is they ran it a couple of times, but like just a simple pistol action between Murray and Young. And then I will be so much more fired up about their offense and things like that. And I get it. It is just one game. But I think this is it is early. It is a good sign that Young is already saying, like, all right, go take the ball. And I think that's an important step in that process, because that's what I thought he was going to do when he had Bogdanović. I thought Bogdanović could have been that guy. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how the offense evolves through the course of the season. But after one game, you got to be encouraged. And against the Houston Rockets, too, by the way.
Well, hey, let's not look. The Houston Rockets, they're not good, but they are fun, and that's important. But those two guys, they can just get into the two-man game, you know, consistently. Like you said, pistol action, even just some simple screens. You know, like Steph Curry sets back screens for everybody. Certainly Trae Young could set a screen for DeJounte Murray. So, but I'm hopeful after one game. You know, it's not often that you can say Trae Young went 1 of 9 from 3 and was a plus 16 in the game, right? Like that just, you can't say that very often. So, you know, it's only one game, I mean, again, but it looks good.
Yeah. It's divorcing ball go in from how did we get there? And he was 0-for-4 on the catch and shoot 3 attempts, but I think that him being in the spot to take those means their offense is better balanced. If it continues all season, it'll mean their offense is better balanced and probably more resilient to playoff defenses than it would have been when it's just Trae do everything. I just made a great fucking point, so don't worry.
No, I don't care about your point. I got two of them now.
We gotta fix Seth's internet. We gotta get Seth's internet fixed. Mo,
it might be my laptop. This laptop might be.
We'll figure that out. Mo, yeah. It's only one game, but
the New Orleans Pelicans are here, Dave. Let's go. And it's not all just Zion, although Zion's pretty freaking amazing. So much fun to have him back on the court. But let me just put it to you this way. This team's best offense is miss a shot. They had 21 offensive rebounds. It was just not even close. I mean, it was just like, hey, we're going to miss. That's the plan. Take a shot. We're going to miss. And we have some of the best offensive rebounders in the game. I mean, Zion didn't even lead them in offensive rebounding. It was a tie between Jonas Valanciunas and where'd he go? I had it up.
Brandon Ingram.
No, I was wrong. It wasn't a tie. It was just Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram had 7 rebounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
do you want to stat? Do you want to stat from that game? Thing.
Ryan Pinone is a part of the Pelicans organization. He was their G League head coach for a while. Ryan Pinone has been teaching offensive rebounding strategies for like 3 or 4 years and been doing clinics. I am not shocked to see the Pelicans attacking the offensive glass like this. And again, it goes back to what we talked about from last year's playoffs. Like, look at what the Warriors did. Looney and Wiggins just committed to crash into glass. We saw that already with James Wiseman. Like, this is the new NBA. is crashing the offensive glass and still limiting transition. Take that, Doc Rivers.
So just like crazy, like it's only one game. Zion took 17 shots in the restricted area last night. 17.
He bullied his way in. It was something. It was It was really impressive. Like just, and it wasn't just that. It was the performance of CJ McCollum. I thought he did a great job just kind of running the offense. You know, Brandon Ingram, 10 of 17, really efficient. I was just impressed with the team itself and just how they played. I'm really, really high on this New Orleans team. Like I'm in. Sign me up. I'm in. It's not just Zion, but I just think across the board, they have so much talent. It's going to be a fun watch.
You know, there are a lot of people worried about the fit with Ingram and Zion. Man, Zion fits in. You know, like Zion just comes in there. There are so many plays. They don't run offense for him. They don't have to. Like you can set him up with an ISO and he can make something happen. He finds ways in semi-transition or as a trailer to get the ball heading downhill. Like you don't have to run plays for him, which is what a luxury, Mo. Like, I mean, this guy just finds a way to make it work no matter what. And also happens to hustle on the glass in a way that creates these extra opportunities for your team. I mean, it's a good fit to me.
I mean, it's what we talked about on the Extravaganza show that I'm going to give a stray out there to Jay King, who got super offended. But that's what Zach and I were talking about was Zion's going to go get his. It's not even like you have to worry about it that much. Zion's going to go get his shots just off of those opportunities alone. And you know what? My favorite thing was he had, I think, a layup bucket on Ben Simmons in transition. And just him walking back, he had the biggest smile on his face. And I was just like, yeah, we're back.
Well, guys, I think the Pelicans are a great segue to... It's only one game, but the Nets are really bad. And if I were to call their performance lifeless... Feels like it would be insulting to the dead. They just did not show up. They did not show up at all, man. Like, I don't know. Did they know it was opening night? What is this?
So this ties back to what was actually not my favorite thing for the start of the season, but my favorite thing is feeling rested at the start of the season because we had a full off season and. Brooklyn isn't back from it yet.
They're still asleep. They're still resting.
It was almost, I mean, it was almost a level of arrogance with the way they came out. Like, we got this, whatever. We're just going to run through. And it's like, yo, there was just no real enthusiasm. You know, the game started out 11-2 right off the bat. And, you know, their first quarter, they had 9 turnovers. I mean, I tweeted a joke just going like, oh, they're on pace for 36. This is going to go great. They are in a tough situation. Like, they have a tough schedule. You know, their next game is Toronto, I believe. And that's not an easy one. I think you're in these challenging situations to start out. They better get up and get right real quick because everybody's coming for them. Nobody's going to have pity for them. They're going to gun for them.
Every single team, like they have a stamp on them that's different than like, you know, the Warriors, right? The Warriors teams play up because they want to beat them. They're the champs. The Nets, it's almost like they want to pile on. You know, like it's like, well, everyone's getting their licks in on Brooklyn. I want to get some of that. And that's like a bad place to be, man, because at a certain point, it is going to affect your team confidence. And this is already like you already lack skill, you know, at certain positions. I think the defense is a real problem. And frankly, guys, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists and 6 personal fouls from Ben Simmons. You know, hey, it's one game, but damn, that's awful. Is that one of the worst games of his career?
I think there was a game in the playoffs.
He must have had worse.
it was the most lackluster. Like only finished with 3 shot attempts, but really only 1 at the half. Like it was really just kind of a thing. And I don't feel like he has to take a ton of shots. But it
he
just
could play
like
Zion, man. He could play like Zion for them and just find buckets. They don't have to run stuff from him. No,
not
for
even
him.
They can run through him and he will distribute other guys. But the what it really felt like was he just wasn't involved was my bigger issue.
I think he needs more kind of more runway, more structural runway than Zion does. Zion can just, oh, I got the ball here. Let me just put my arm on you and now I'm
he's the Hulk. It's, you know,
well, Simmons doesn't quite
hang
have
on.
That.
Also, Zion has touch and feel and just knows basketball, but also touch. Zion can get a good shot up. Ben Simmons can't. Ben Simmons doesn't have any touch around the basket. He's not a threat to score there. Like when he does make a shot at the basket, that's not a dunk. It feels lucky to me. So that's a big difference.
This is so weird because earlier in his career, like through the first couple of years of his career, his ability to kind of be clever with either hand kind of in not necessarily at the rim, but kind of, you know, in floater range near the rim was one of his kind of defining skill sets. And the fact that that's kind of is it a confidence thing? Is it a skill? I don't know. It's the fact that that's just not there right now is concerning.
Yeah, it's like he just nothing with his wrist.
It was, I mean, but it's not even just that. Like, they all floated through this game. And, like, listen, Seth Curry's not going to fix that. No offense. Like, whatever.
Joe Harris
isn't going to
fix it.
Right. Or Joe Harris. Like, I just felt like the whole process to start the game was flat. I felt like KD got going a little bit, and they tried to make it close at one point, and then the Pelicans just ran roughshod on them in the second half. But, like, was unimpressed with Kyrie. Like everything about it, like the guys who have the most to prove on this team really didn't show up. KD has nothing to prove to me. You know, and I know Kyrie's a baller, but we have to see him actually ball. Simmons has to actually show us he can. And I feel like that's one of those things where the two guys that had the most to prove didn't show up in this game. And it's one game, but man, they might need to do some soul searching already.
We're going to be hearing trade rumors in like a week. Seth, let's move on. It's only one game, but freeze again?
Oh, he unfroze.
No, I wasn't frozen. I just wasn't.
That's impressive. Go.
I set you up. No, it's only one game, but no, I feel like you want me to say, oh, shouldn't we be worried about the Denver Nuggets? I'm like, yeah, that was
no.
A,
he said your AD point.
Oh shit, I didn't even see that in the thing. All right. Fuck, what a mess we are today. My bad, guys.
Your balls get sniffed.
It's like I'm missing something. Like a part of me is.
Better. Okay, you ready? I'll set you up.
Ready for us. Yes.
It's only one game. Overall, they looked as bad as kind of we suspected they might. But Anthony Davis looks good physically. And I don't think it matters. Even if that keeps up all season, he's relatively healthy all season. He's lighter. He seemed a little spryer. I don't remember him being able to make – there was a player late in the first half against Golden State where he kind of, you know, was – fake jogging back on defense and kind of reverse pivoted and stole a cross court pass and went in for a layup. Like he didn't have the agility to make that play a year ago. Cause he's a little too big, I think. I just don't think it matters. Like he's going to be great and they're going to wear him out by January. Cause he's going to have to do too much for him. Cause their team is just not good.
But he's going to average 27 points a game because that's the thing that actually that I think that, he's very interested in getting 27 points a game. That's the only thing I can tell you from watching AD play. I mean, he's getting those shots up. He had 27 points on 22 shots and 9 free throw attempts. I don't know what to do with that. That's high volume. It's good stats, bad team.
Well, where are the shots
right.
coming from?
I mean,
though?
I guess you don't where really have you, anywhere else to know. Give them, but man, he's been the worst shooter. Shout out to Kirk Goldsberry. He had the graphic. Been the worst shooter in the league the last couple of years. I think maybe it's bad strategy to have the worst shoot. This is like doubling down on Russell Westbrook.
He had a his only sustained period of jump shooting success was in the bubble.
Yep. I think they just have to go to him in the post, and he has to stop trying to float around the perimeter. It's not working. Like, we can't have another year where he just shoots like 25% from three or whatever it's going to be, and, you know, the mid-range shot and things like that. I know he's trying to show that. Yo, you're going to have to play in the post. The face-up game, the rip and go, right? Like, it was one of the first plays of the game. Got it on the post, faced up, ripped, went baseline, got going. I know I just gave Seth a small aneurysm right there, but like you had made a face. That's why. I think the ultimate thing though is, I think that's the game they need from him. That pick and roll and things like that. They need to delineate roles in a way on that team across the board. I'm gonna tell you right now, they'll lose every game they shoot 43s.
I think. And I think that's illustrative of, because I think that if you have a team that would start with AD and LeBron, like, being able to get up 43 should be a good thing, because that you're going to have spacing. So I think we're doing the thing a little bit with them where we're, well, you know, AD wasn't good enough, but Superman wouldn't be good enough.
Nobody's fixing that. Yeah. Nobody's fixing that. So that's a tire fire of a roster, and no offense to anybody that's on there that happens to be listening, but.
Like, I like a few of their peripheral players. I like Austin Reeves. I think Pat Beverly can still contribute. I just – it's like, you know, they're in – they're three slots too high in the pecking order.
That was my question for you. But more importantly, like, I think when you're a team like this – and this is something I think – and this is your boy. Darvin Ham is going to have to kind of dial back here a little bit. When you don't have shooters, you can't shoot threes. You really can't. Like, that's, unless it's a catch and shoot opportunity, they should average the fewest attempts in the league. And I get it. Teams are going to crowd the paint, all that stuff. I understand that. You have to make some of those shots. But they were taking shots off the dribble. I mean, I watched a play where Patrick Beverly took a pull-up three with AD and LeBron on the court. Like, yo, LeBron said after the game, we got a ton of open looks. That might be by design. But, like, that's the thing. That's the shot they want you to take. They can't, they will not win games. They're not going to outshoot anybody. They got to really be solid defensively and find a way to get easy buckets in transition and go. But, like, they're not going to win games shooting threes.
Game one of the season, and they are desperately trying to run Matt Ryan off screens because they just need to hit some threes. And I mean just desperately trying to get him coming off screens. That's a bad sign for game one. I think this team is bad. We probably are not going to talk about them all that much, to be honest with you, until LeBron comes close to breaking the scoring record or they make a trade. But, you know, it is kind of a bummer that AD does look really good physically. I thought he started out the game Tuesday night. The first 5 minutes defensively, he was making himself known. He was moving around the way that we expect. But, man, the other part of the game just isn't there.
We saw this last year, too, where they asked so much of him on both ends of the floor, and he's not an Iron Man. And it's you know, whatever chance of success they have kind of goes away if those two guys can't be on the court, and they just don't have the other infrastructure around them to help ensure they stay on the court.
Yeah, well, we got some more stuff to talk about. Here we go. Mo, it's only one game, but...
are we worried about the Denver Nuggets yet? Like, I'm sorry. This is, listen. They were on the road. Okay, no problem. It's Utah, though, who's literally, I felt like Danny Ainge was going to start running down the sideline and pulling guys out of the game mid-game. But, like, when I looked up the score at one point, just to kind of, like, watch some of the other games, I'll catch that game maybe later or whatever. And it was already a 20-point game, but it was Utah that was up, not Denver. Like, and I was like, oh, well, maybe like Jokic didn't play or something. They had everybody. What the hell happened?
Again, back to the parody thing. Any given night, I'll tell you one thing that did happen repeatedly. Colin Sexton was attacking Jokic. He was getting him in isolation. He was going downhill. There was one play where he like swipes his foot like a bull. You know, the young bull was at the top of the key and he's swiping his foot and then just takes him to the basket. I think Jokic has got to be better there. I mean, he definitely looked tired by the end of that game, but he's got to be better there defensively. That's number one, is that Jokic has to find a way to, if he's going to get put in isolation, he's got to find a way to compete. There was no competition there. But the other thing is, man, Utah might just be too good to tank. They're going to have to trade these guys.
Well, I think that part's coming.
I mean, they're going to be bad. They're going to have to trade Lauri Markkanen. Like, I think he's just too good of a – he's going to be too good of a player. He's going to steal some wins for them. Colin Sexton, I mean, they're going to play him. I mean, he's there. I just think that it's tough when you've got guys that have that much heart, right? Like, he is going to compete every single possession.
Stop. You got away from the question. I don't give a shit about Utah.
Well, I'm trying to think about Utah, Denver? Because I'm just not that worried about Denver.
What the f***, Denver? No, I don't care. Right. Opening night, first impressions, and this is
Jamal Murray should come off the bench, right? Like, Jamal Murray should come off the bench. That, if you're asking me to make, to give you some sort of feedback from the first game, it is Jamal Murray. I don't think he's ready to play, you know, like, starter minutes. The Warriors brought Steph Curry off the bench coming back from injury in the playoffs. I think Jamal Murray could come off the bench for the first 15 or 20 games while everyone's trying to work their way back into shape and, you know, kind of get accustomed to each other again. I mean, he wasn't very good at all in this game.
Nobody was. They got their ass kicked by Utah. Nobody was good.
They somehow against Utah, which I don't think we like. Who's Utah's best defender?
Kelly Olynyk?
Jared Vanderbilt's their best defender.
Jared Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Who had 12 rebounds in 18 minutes.
Yeah, they generated 8 open threes with, you know, with good shooting and, you know, the best passer in the league. So that's, I think that's from a, this might just be a, honestly, it most likely from my standpoint, this is a burn the tape game for Denver. And you prefer not to start the season with the burn the tape game. But I think on my guess is that this is just going to be a burn the tape game.
I know it's more of a fluke, but it's just like, God damn, guys, 21 turnovers. Like, you're looking at this. We're talking about this team as a potential contender, like literally a team that can win the NBA finals. And you go out there to a team that's tanking, that we all know is trying to lose. And you don't, it's not even like, hey, they just played really tough and it was a gutty game. You got the doors blown off right away. Like, that's tough.
And they only got up 22 threes. Utah made 16. That's your game, right? Beyond everything else, that's your game. They've got to find a way to generate more threes.
That was
but it's the Nuggets. They'll be fine. I'm not that worried about them, but this could be their worst loss of the season. I mean, hopefully for them, it's their worst loss of the season. Shit. What, are they going to lose to San Antonio or some shit? Oh, my God, that would be miserable. If they lose to another tanking team, I'm going to have real problems.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, guys, I got one more here for you, and I know this is going to come out of left field for me especially. It's only one game, but the Warriors are going to go back-to-back. They're too deep. They have youth that are veterans. They have championship experience. I think that the Warriors, they look really good. And they were playing around the other day. Steph Curry, whatever decline there's been from Steph Curry over the last couple seasons is mitigated to a high degree by Jordan Poole. But also just by the way those guys play. Moses Moody only played 8 minutes. And he would start for maybe, you know, 10 teams in the league. This team is super deep. The vibe seemed okay on ring night, Mo. I know you hate ring night, but the Warriors are going back to back.
I mean, they're one of the contenders. I think a lot of teams would like a word. I think they're right in the mix of things. But, you know, Draymond didn't look particularly great, I thought. And granted, like, this is the funny thing about this game was the Warriors went about this game like it was a preseason game. The way they played their rotation and minutes, like, they literally just said, it's ring night. We know we're going to have guys distracted. We're not going to play guys hard. We're not going to play guys long. And it would have been an even bigger win had they actually cared. They had a ton of turnovers. They were sloppy in everything that they did and things like that. But I still think it's going to take a while. I'm not sure. I like the young guys. I like Kuminga. I like Wiseman. I like Moody, who only, like you said, got 8 minutes. I like the Jermichael Green pickup. But, like, I still think there are a lot of good teams out in the West. And
it's not exactly a measuring stick.
Yeah, opponent. Like, this is, you know, like, this is what Denver was supposed to do to Utah, Dave. You know, it's along those lines. But, like, I think the Clippers would like a word, Dave. Because I think they're a team right there. And I get the caveat.
Clippers haven't even won a game this season yet, Mo. What do you know?
Neither has Denver, but you're on them. No, I just think the if I had to pick the Warriors or the West, I would pick the West because it's just stacked. Just the odds of it. It's so many good teams.
Seth, what do you think about Wiseman? I think he's a pivotal piece for them. You know, they don't have a lot of size in the interior, and it was a concern for them, and it was a concern for us for them. They, of course, managed somehow. It helped that when they played Boston, you know, Robert Williams, not a huge big. They didn't have to deal with a Jokic, but I thought Wiseman looked solid, man. He wasn't jumping, trying to block a lot of shots. I thought he stayed within himself, played his role pretty well.
I think, again, it's the level of test. This is not an opponent that has is going to stress like his defensive awareness necessarily. Like the difference in physical tools between him and Kevon Looney is pretty sizable, but Kevon Looney has such good defensive anticipation and awareness. And you see that against a team that's going to run stuff, you know, not to be pejorative to the Lakers, but against a team that's going to run stuff and you have to guard, you know, more than three players on the floor at any given time. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm just saying I need to see it before I'm.
Yeah. There. Looney and Wiggins in this game. I thought that those guys look exactly like they did in the finals. Looney and Wiggins, they're whatever mojo they had working in the finals, it carried right over. Looney was plus 30 in 21 minutes. Like they were rolling with them.
Did you guys notice how, like, when Wiggins was guarding Westbrook a lot of the time and Westbrook would be in, like, the weak side slot and Wiggins would basically be standing on the elbow facing the basket? Like, not even
– Well, Westbrook's not cutting. He's not doing anything. Like, Westbrook – I mean, like, if you're – it's just, like, normally in basketball, like, a guy shows you his back, time to cut. And that's not happening with that stuff. And I think that's just – where they're at. I mean, Wiggins is going to have, I think, another unbelievable year. I think, like, the breakthrough through the finals, thought he was the second best player for the Warriors last year in the finals, and I think he's going to end up being the second or third best player this year for them.
Yeah, he's going to get all NBA defense this year, I think. He's enough on the radar that he's a good defender that he should get votes this year. Truth is, this guy, he's an argument for the best 3-and-D wing in the league. And can do stuff off the dribble. So, you know, a little bit more valuable even than just a 3-and-D wing. And like,
it's just such a, perfect illustration that, you know, finding the right fit and right role is so important for, like, is he a better player than he was in Minnesota? Possibly. Is he a more effective player in this situation than as, like, here's the ball, go do something? Absolutely.
Yeah, became more efficient. He became a better three-point shooter. You know what I mean? Like, but the defensive stuff from him, the offensive rebounding, you know, this was always a thing that I had with Wiggins. When people would bring him up, I'd say, well, I think he's a good player, but a guy with that sort of athleticism needs to be a better defender, and he needs to be able to rebound. And now, you know, this guy just does those things. I think Wiggins is great. The new contract that he just got is a steal for the Warriors. That's where we're at on Andrew Wiggins. pretty impressive, man. Is that all Steph Curry or nah?
No, I mean it's Steph culture. I mean, it is Steph Curry, and I don't even say just structure. Just having, you know, being able to have him be the number four guy on offense, and then that and be in a defensive collective that allows him to function. Yeah, I mean, I think that. So, is that all Steph? No, I think that's the collective of the Warriors allows him to play a game that is better fit with his skill set than be the savior.
I think the key word is stability. That's what the Warriors provided for him, was stability. Hey, this is what we need. This is what we expect. Nothing else is changing here. See that guy, Steph Curry? He ain't going anywhere. Clay, I mean, he's injured and stuff, but like, he's going to come back. That coach, Kerr, he's not going anywhere. Front office, stable. It was stability. And I think that was the key thing. And I think, you know, the you hit on it, Seth, like just the ability, the difference of I got to be the savior of this franchise versus I got to be just a piece of the French franchise is massive. And I think some guys, being the savior is hard as hell. Like, this is a very, not a lot of guys can do what John Morant does, you know, at a young age and everything, and carry a franchise and a city. And I feel like that's not what's asked of him. And I think that makes a big difference.
And that stability is the secret to their success in developing these young guys too. You know, Jordan Poole might not, I mean, the G League bubble. I want to see a doc on that, because some of the guys that came out of that have just been incredible. But Jordan Poole especially.
He was the worst player in the league.
He was awful.
Yeah.
But they allowed this guy to fail and supported him. And, I mean, this is that stability that you're talking about. So, yeah, Warriors back-to-back, calling it now after one game. I've seen all I need to see. Guys, time to wrap up the show. You guys got anything else before we go?
I'd say shouts to Joe Mazzulla. I mean, I think it's a difficult, obviously, situation for how he came into that team. And I don't know, like, how much do you give the coach credit or whatever, but Boston, like, they ran good offense on opening night. They didn't, you know, the last time we saw Boston's offense, it was not that. And obviously this current version of Philly isn't the defensive test that those Warriors were, but still they you know, they got big nights from Brown and Tatum, but they were big nights in the flow of things just kind of happening. I don't know if naturally is the right word, but happening sensibly and logically and progressing, and the ball finding where it should go and people taking good shots. And so, you know, just I guess to Joe Mazzulla for his first win, and to Boston overall for, you know, coming out of the gate. And having – no, actually, we're still
more,
pretty good.
More impressive than anything else from that Boston game, besides their defense, which you can go check out on the latest One Mo Thing, was their transition offense. They turned defense into offense at a rate like they have not done in years. You know, I think they finished 24-2 in fast break offense. And I know, yeah, run it against the Sixers, you know, slow team and things like that and stuff like that. But it was – force a turnover, and you saw three or four guys sprinting down the court. They were getting fast break points off of missed shots. They were running on every opportunity they had. It was you could see the emphasis of it, and I was pretty impressed by that.
I think this is an area where Malcolm Brogdon, as long as he stays healthy, helps them. It's kind of odd because he's not a Jet, but he is, you know, in soccer, we would say his style of play is direct. Like, there were times last year where you could pressure up on Boston, and especially once they traded Dennis Schroeder, they didn't have anyone who would be like, well, okay, I beat the first guy. I'm going straight at the basket as fast as I possibly can. And like, that is Brogdon's, you know, that is a big part of Brogdon's game. And I think that adds a dimension.
And Derek White's kind of that guy too, right? Like, I mean, this 0.5 principles thing, you know, carrying over from the Spurs, where if you just have guys who at least will make a decision and move, I think that they just have a bunch of those guys. It's good for them.
I don't think enough has been made of the Brogdon acquisition in the sense, and I know some of it got lost in the shuffle with everything that's happened, but like, not just in, as Seth would say, playing direct. It's just, yo, they had a possession where Tatum drives, the defense shifts over, he kicks it out to Blake Griffin on the wing, Griffin swings it to Brogdon in the corner, and it's another drive. right? And it's like he just attacks and things like that. It's straight line drives. It's get into the paint. And then from there, creating. And I think it's just all of that stuff there. I think the elements that he's going to add, you know, the thing about Brogdon has always been health. But I think what he's going to add to this team is just so deep. And coming off the bench and being able to do that, it's huge. And then, you know, they're able to survive if somebody does go down. Because it's a long season at some point. And, you know, being able to pair Brogdon with Tatum or Brown in the second unit from time to time, it doesn't put all that pressure on those guys. It lightens the load. Like, this is just a slam dunk pickup for them.
Well, that's going to do it for this week, folks. Stick with us all year long on the Athletic NBA Show and every Friday for Nerder, She Wrote, with Seth Partnow, Mo DeKeel, and Dave DeFore. I'm Dave DeFore. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Athletic NBA Show.
So, my favorite thing. Sorry, I had something and then I just completely make a note of this.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.